2 Timothy is one of my favourite letters of Paul's. And it's written very late in his life, but it's his very personal letter. And if it's not very long, it's worth reading. You get the sense of this very personal appeal, and some of it that almost makes you feel sorry for him. Lots of people have deserted him. But in the midst of it, he writes to Timothy. He charges him. Really handing on his life work to him. And it's very poignant, even the way it starts. We didn't see it on the screen, but he says, to Timothy, my son. Now, Timothy wasn't his real son, all right, but he was like his son. He says, to Timothy, my son, here is your life's work. Here's what has been my life's work. I give it to you. And then he explains really what that work is about. The interesting thing is that he actually gives us a list of metaphors. Now, I don't know if you know what a mixed metaphor is. Do you know what a mixed metaphor is? Do you know what a metaphor is? Some of you are nodding. That's a great relief, because in the first congregation, no one knew, or no one was game to say. All right? A metaphor is where we use an image or an idea or a concept to explain something. It's not really that thing. It's an example of it. So, for instance, John Gowan said, the Salvation Army will die and who will weep at its funeral? And that's a metaphor. The Salvation Army is a living thing that could actually die and it wouldn't actually have a funeral. All right, so they're metaphors. We know that, don't we? And mixed metaphors are when you kind of it can make sense, you jumble them together. So let me give you an example. So in the United States, the head of the Federal Reserve said, in economic data are guideposts that tell you how we're going to be shifting the mix of our tools as we try to land this ship in a smooth way onto the aircraft carrier. All right, so that's a mix of metaphors. Did you get that? Or the football coach who after the match in the press conference said, obviously it's been a very difficult 2 days for us. We kind of saw the writing on the wall Friday night. It's just apples versus oranges and it's not a level playing field by any means. All right. So a mix of metaphors. We get the idea. So here's Paul reeling off this list of metaphors to his protege Timothy as he really instructs him in what he's called to do. And the first one, and this is from 2 Timothy 2, the first one is where he says, gives the metaphor of a soldier. I do like this one because I don't know if you noticed that it actually says, and the good soldier obeys his commanding officer. Excellent. Thank you, soldiers. Just wanted to point that out. I'll just leave it there, right? So a good soldier obeys his commanding officer. But this image of the soldier is more than that. It's more about obedience. He says endure, all right? Endure. Now, someone once said that war is mainly boredom, punctuated by moments of sheer terror. And I guess we're not talking about the moments of sheer terror, but the enduring. All right, lots of the uncomfortable, awkward, difficult stuff that the soldier's meant to endure. But it's also about staying focused on the goal. What is a soldier's job, after all? What is the job of any army? Their job is not to look good on the parade ground, although that's helpful. Their job is not to have the uniform spick and span. Their job is to win battles. That's their job. That's their main job. That it's a metaphor of the soldier. There's this idea of enduring and staying focused on the task that Jesus has called us to, because Jesus, of course, is our real commanding officer. So this idea that when we cannot see our way, that we trust Jesus. When we cannot see our way, still we trust and still obey. That line from the psalm. We can't see it all. We can't see the big picture, but we know our job is to trust Jesus and to follow him. And then Paul moves on to this image, this metaphor of the athlete. And this is the idea of discipline and preparation. It's about knowing the game, he says. He's talking about the athlete, the competitor. That's what he's describing here. He's not talking about training just as an end in itself, right? It's not training just to get fit. It's not talking about someone like Michelle Bridges. Do you know who Michelle Bridges is? Some of you are hip with the kids, all right? So Michelle Bridges, so she's a fitness guru and diet coach and so forth. What he's talking about is the competitor. So one of my heroes is Elise Perry. Do you know who Elise Perry is? So she's a young woman who's an extraordinary athlete, but she's a competitor. She represents Australia in soccer. She represents Australia in cricket. All right? The difference between being fit and being a competitor. You see, the competitor knows the game and they stay focused. They know the rules. They know their context. They know what it is they're meant to be doing. They play their part. So I only tell you this story because she's not here. But when I first met Sharon, Sharon was into sport. And she was either training or playing sport 5 nights a week when I first met her. And when we got married and, set up house together, and we unpacked our boxes, she had a box filled with all her awards and trophies. And there was a lot of them. And I had one trophy, as it happens. I put that in Sharon's box so I could just have some friends. And so she had MVP awards for netball and for rep netball, and she, when I met her, she'd been playing A-grade basketball, and at school she played softball, and so she's very competitive, very athletic, right? And so what happened was when we moved with various appointments around the place, Sharon would just go and join the local netball team, and it happened on 3 occasions that she went and joined a team, which might be B2 or B3 or something, and within a couple of years, each of her teams won the grand final. So it happened, we went to Chatswood, she went to Willoughby and joined the team there. It happened when we went to the college, she went down and joined the local team and they won the grand final. And I remember watching her in a grand final once, because she'd played a few of them, remember? And I remember watching her, she used to play centre. And if you know netball, kind of a crucial position. And her team was losing at 3/4 time. And I remember watching her play and she just kind of left it all on the field. I remember when she came off, she said to me, "Did we win?" Now, unfortunately, they hadn't, all right? But she didn't know because she hadn't been counting the score. All she'd been doing was focusing on her job, all right? She wasn't worried about the scoreboard. She knew her task. Her task was to run hard, get a hand to every possible intercept, to make sure her passes went to people, all of that kind of stuff. Now, they say that's what good athletes do, right, in competitive sport. They don't worry about the scoreboard. The scoreboard, in a sense, is beyond their control. What they worry about is their job. That's what we're talking about. It is a metaphor of the athlete who knows the rules, who knows what it means to compete, who knows what they are called to do. That implies to us as missioners in this great task that we've been called to as salvationists, to know our context, to know our community, to know what matters most, to focus our energy where we can make a difference. Then the third metaphor is that of the farmer. And I guess this really speaks of perseverance, of just turning up, really. If any of you have, I don't know if you grew up on farms or have farms in your family background somewhere. When I was a kid, we moved to Inverell, and for a number of years we lived on a small mixed farm there. And it wasn't possible to make a pay, so Dad went driving trucks and my brother and I did lots of the work on the farm. And so I used to really hate Saturdays because Saturdays was mainly work, and we eventually had pigs, and my brother and I would spend about 4 hours of a Saturday cleaning out the pig pens. Now, you might be imagining that that's a really fun and exciting job, but you'd be wrong, all right? You'd be wrong. The thing about life on the farm is it just never stops. If you know anybody who's been a dairy farmer, like, it never stops. The cows turn up every morning, and they do turn up. They come to be milked every day. And so there's this idea of perseverance. But Paul also talks about the fact that there's reward for the farmer. There is reward when there's evidence of growth, when there's new life, when there's fruit, when there is a crop. when there is abundance. The Christian life is not without its joys. You know, it's not just about grinding out this life as a Christian. It's not just about suffering. I mean, I thought lunch last week was great. I had a good time there. Anytime you don't have to cook and you don't have to wash up, it's a bonus, isn't it? It's a bonus. What's the thing about your church that you love the most? Is it the small group that you meet in? All right? Is it worship? Is it the friends that you have at church? Christian life is not without joy. But nevertheless, there's this call to keep going, to persist, to be faithful, to be faithful. Now, I don't know what your coffee order is, but have you ever made an order at a coffee shop for a decaf skim latte with no sugar? Is that anybody's drink of choice, a decaf skim latte with no sugar? You know what it's called? It's called a why bother. All right? A decaf skim latte with no sugar, why bother? It's not really coffee. Why would Paul tell Timothy all this? Why would he explain this to Timothy? Why did it matter? Because it's not for Timothy's benefit, in a way. It's not for Timothy's benefit. That would be a why bother. Why would you bother to say it? It's actually for the not yet saved. It's for this idea of salvation. Paul says it in verse 10. So that people may obtain salvation, that we might bring others to Jesus. That's why we bother. That's why it matters. That's why he wrote it. Now, metaphors are not meant to say everything, but they do say something important about the subject at hand. Why a soldier? We know our task and we're focused on making disciples. Why an athlete? We know the rules. We understand our context. Making disciples. Why a farmer? We work hard and persevere and enjoy life along the way in this great call of making disciples. Now, I want to show you an image of the church as I understand it. Have you got that slide there for me? Now, I have no talent at all as a graphic designer. I want you to know that. This took me hours to put this together. I call it my hamburger because it's meant to look like a hamburger, right? Now, central to all that we do, our focus is lives changed by Jesus. That's the driver. That's our task. That's what we're called to do, to bring salvation to people's lives. And that is central, our central task. But how do we wrap that enterprise up? What does it look like? Well, sure, we have a pastoral care team and we have a leadership team. But really, they're not crucial. Well, they are, kind of, but they have a role to play. But at the heart of this Christian enterprise is the things that would be common for every church. If you went to every church and you said, what does your church do? What are the activities that are central? They would say that we need to pray. That's a central task for Christians, isn't it? Can you imagine a church where you didn't pray? That's not possible, is it? Part of the church is worshipping together, all right, that we acknowledge that we're God's people. Part of our task is growing in the Word. All right, this is fundamental to who we are. That we care for each other. That we care for our neighbour. So these are common tasks to every church. Here's a bit where it changes down the bottom. And actually, could you go to the next slide, please? So what all these activities that we have as a core at the bottom, they're the enablers, if you like. So all of these things facilitate and enable prayer and worship, growing in the Word, caring for each other, caring for our neighbourhood. They're all enablers. They have no intrinsic value on their own. They're not the most important thing. The most important thing is lives changed by Jesus. But these enablers make that possible. And all of them help us on these central tasks that are common to every church. Because here's the thing about mission. It is a complex task. No one of us can do it on our own. So we need the help of others. That's why the New Testament is always talking about gifts, talking about the body, having different gifts, different skills, different talents, that together we might be engaged in this great salvation task of seeing lives changed by Jesus. That's our calling. That's our calling. None of these enablers are ends in themselves. They exist to serve this central purpose. Thank you, Judith. You see, Christian community without a purpose, without that central purpose at the top, is a why bother? Why would you do it? You wouldn't just do it just for. All right? The central task is lives changed by Jesus Christ. That's what Paul means when he says, I endure everything for the sake of the elect, that they too may obtain the salvation that is in Christ. I endure everything for the sake of the still to be saved. And Paul knows that this will be hard. That's what John Gowan said. You know, it's hard work, this business of salvation. But we don't give in. Paul says to Timothy right at the start of this explanation in chapter 2, be strong in the grace of Jesus Christ. Be strong in the grace of Jesus Christ. You will be strong in the grace of Jesus Christ. I suspect that he knows that this will test Timothy, test him to his limits, and that's why he encourages him. But it's also a message to us too. We are Christians. We are a people. We have a future, and we must know our task. Yes, this whole Christian enterprise will challenge us. But remember, we never do it alone. We help, support, and encourage one another, and God himself sustains us. I don't know about you, but I think about the sort of person I want to be. I think about the sort of core I want to be, or the sort of core I want to be part of. And I think of Paul's words, those last words that Danny read to us today. And I want this to sound like us. For I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. We have a glorious task, and God himself is with us on that journey. So we endure, we prepare, and we persevere for the sake of the still to be saved. And that is the task to which our Lord has called us.